there's a lot of conservative agitation, not just libertarian, but conservative agitation to revive that idea. And, you know, I don't know what Judge Gorsuch thinks of this, but I would be guardedly optimistic that he's a friend of that.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Randy Barnett, and we're talking about the newest Supreme Court nomination, Neil Gorsuch. Randy, thanks for talking to us. You're at Georgetown Law. Immediate reaction, Neil Gorsuch, good or bad choice?
Well, we knew the president was going to pick from this list of 21, and so of that's our universe of comparison, and of all the people on that list, he was certainly near the top of that list.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, though, in terms of, like, obviously, and Trump has this weird tick of, like, reeling off somebody's resume, like, oh, you know, Trump went to Penn, that's a Ivy League school, he talked about Harvard and Harvard and more Harvard and then some Oxford, but is Gorsuch, from a libertarian point of view, is he the guy that we want to, you know, be effectively the deciding vote in a lot of Supreme Court cases for the next, 50 or, you know, 35 years, because he's 49 years old.
Let's start with qualifications of a more conventional sort. Mm-hmm. The guy is super smart. Mm-hmm. He's experienced as a court appeals judge. He's a good writer.
Yep.
And he has a great educational background.
Yep.
Columbia, Harvard Law School, and a DPhil. From mm-hmm. Oxford, where he studied under John Finnis, the famous natural law philosopher.
So this is good from a libertarian perspective, because natural law is the thing that puts limits on the government, enumerated, unenumerated. It's just the idea that the government can't control all aspects of our lives.
Well, Finnis has a famous book called Natural Law and Natural Rights. Natural law and natural rights are not the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and Finnis knows there's a difference. Presumably, Gorsuch does as well.
Yeah.
Finnis is not my cup of tea when mm-hmm. it comes to natural law thinking. He's quite conservative, and I don't think he's very libertarian. And for putting his politics to one side, his philosophy is not my cup of tea
right.
when it comes to natural law. But if you ask me if I would like a justice who thinks respectfully
yeah.
of natural law, understands, has some understanding of it, and sort of thinks it's not nonsense mm-hmm. Nonsense on stilts,
right.
which was Jeremy Bentham's phrase for it. I would say that's a pretty big plus
yeah.
and different than other justices that we've had or that were on that list.
So do you think that, I mean, one of your big causes is having justices who will strike down laws that take rights away from individuals to make decisions in their lives, like that grow the government's power. Do you think Gorsuch will be an ally in that?
Well, I think we need to deal with the candidacy okay. as a whole. So I started with basic qualifications.
Yeah.
Credentials, accomplishments, smarts, writing mm-hmm. ability.
So this judicial, is not Harriet Myers.
Judicial, yes, he does have somewhat of a record.
Mm-hmm.
Judicial courage is also very important. We've seen what happens when judges lack courage to mm-hmm. go up against conventional wisdom. All of these are qualities that you want to see in a justice mm-hmm. before you get to judicial philosophy, which
right.
is what you are asking me about. I believe judicial philosophy is part of the qualifications.
Right.
It's not over. You don't just put somebody on who's, quote, qualified. I mean,
right.
Merrick Garland, who is my classmate
right.
at Harvard, is supremely qualified, but he has a judicial philosophy to which I object.
Right.
Nevertheless, but you do want your judges to be competent. You
mm-hmm.
want them to be
yeah.
qualified. Plus, okay, so first of all, I think Judge Gorsuch ticks off the qualified box.
Yeah.
So that's big.
And that's not a small thing with Trump, because people, I mean, are dealing with a president who it seems to not really give a shit about, you know, that type of stuff. So it's a good sign that he went through, he picked a guy who is eminently pre-qualified. Then we get to the judicial philosophy
right.
question.
It's a great sign
yeah.
because
yeah.
we, going through the campaign, first of all, we didn't know if he would stick to his list.
Right.
So he keeps his promise.
Mm-hmm.
Having a guy who keeps, that's
yeah,
a good
yeah.
sign. It's kind of different. It's kind of a
yeah.
change of pace.
Yeah.
And so he keeps his promise. He sticks to the list. And he's prepared to pick a guy who's sort of smarter than he
mm-hmm.
is.
Yeah.
Let's face it. I mean,
and
he may, we didn't, first of all, every president who's picked a good judge has typically picked one who's smarter than they
right.
are. But the question, are they internally self-confident enough to do that?
Yeah.
Apparently, Donald yeah. Trump is.
Okay.
That's, we didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So that's good. Now, you're dying to get to judicial philosophy. That's really where you want to go. You're all about results, Nick. You're just a result-oriented journalist.
Absolutely a result-oriented journalist. Right. Yes.
So we can't put you on the court. The truth of the matter is we don't know. There are three components that, apart from judicial courage, mm-hmm. there are three substantive components that I would be looking for, that I would want to see. There's three boxes. Mm-hmm. The originalist box, the precedent box, willing to reverse precedent box, and the unenumerated liberties, privileges or immunities, and or due process, economic mm-hmm. liberty, what box. Those are three separate boxes. Right. Interrelated, but you could check off one and the other not. Let's take the first box, mm-hmm. which in some respects gets you to the others.
Yeah.
He is by far and away a committed originalist.
Yeah.
He has written about original. First of all, mm-hmm. he's an acolyte of Justice, an admirer of Justice Scalia, who ticks off that box.
Right.
Scalia didn't tick off the other two boxes, by the way, so well.
Yeah.
So it's not like Scalia is a ceiling. Scalia, in some respects, provides us with a floor.
Right.
So Gorsuch ticks off the box. Not only does he say he's an originalist, but in his opinions, he refers to interpreting the text according to its original public meaning.
Right.
That is the state of the art of originalist theory that I propose.
Yeah.
So there's the old original framers' intent.
Mm-hmm.
People still talk like that if they don't know what they're talking about. He says original public meaning. It means he mm-hmm. knows what he's talking about, and he understands that's the end he wants to be on. And that, truthfully, in fairness, is what Justice Scalia was for.
Right.
And he promoted it, original public meaning. So that's box number one. That's good. And he said repeatedly that's how we should approach things. The precedent box, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know. There is some rumbling. Ilya Soman had a piece on mm-hmm. the Vala conspiracy, which found a piece by him. I think it must have been an essay mm-hmm. in which he praised the New Deal justices for their restraint. And I don't know when that was.
Yep.
I don't know if his thinking has changed. By the way, the thinking of conservatives have changed about this in recent years. We don't know if his thinking has changed or not. But anyway, that wasn't great when I read that. But we just don't know. And you know what? We're not going to find out.
Right.
One reason is because Court of Appeals judges actually do try to follow precedent, and they should.
Yeah.
So they're doing their job, especially if they have higher aspirations.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't have to follow precedent when they get on the court, mm-hmm. and we'll know whether when he gets there, if he chooses to, and we won't know that before, and it doesn't matter what he's asked at his confirmation mm-hmm. hearings, we won't know.
Right.
The third box is the due process, privilege or immunities or economic liberties box, and here, again, A, we don't know, but B, I would not be optimistic about this. I wouldn't be optimistic.
Because you're not optimistic about anybody in that situation, pretty much. Yeah.
Unless I know.
Yeah.
Justice Don Willett of the Texas Supreme Court, who's shown some interest in this area.
Right.
Unless I have some reason to think so, I'm not optimistic. He could surprise us. If he surprised us, you know what it would be? A surprise.
Yeah.
That's it. So, look, it's hard to expect that a Republican president of any kind, if Ted Cruz were picking, I think we would be less likely to get somebody mm-hmm. who ticks that box than Donald Trump picking who isn't really aware of it. Ted Cruz is aware of it, and he's very likely to choose against it.
So what do you think about now that we'll have a full Supreme Court roster of 9 justices? Are they going to be a significant factor in what is shaping up as a Trump presidency that seems to be interested in having a president who has a lot of power? Are they going to be pushing back against that? Are they going to be pushing back against Congress? We hear, there are rumblings in Congress that they're going to take back power from the executive branch. What is your, kind of prophecy of the Supreme Court over the next 4 years?
The president has been given enormous discretionary power by congressional statute for a very long time. I don't think Donald Trump is doing anything that's not authorized by statute. This whole idea of running around saying what he's doing is unconstitutional, mm-hmm. what he's doing is illegal, I haven't seen any good argument for A, why it's illegal, and B, why it's unconstitutional.
Even as it might be unwise.
Yeah.
Or
the
not
idea that
preferred.
You have a policy disagreement with the president, exercising his discretion, is to be expected of a Republican or a Democrat.
Right.
But I don't see any great sign that this is going to be any more of an imperial presidency than Barack mm-hmm. Obama's presidency was.
But we should point out that's a bad presidency, right? an imperial presidency is, it's taken for granted, but it's a bad
presidency. Yeah, although libertarians seem to get a lot more incensed about Republicans' imperial presidencies than they do about Democrats, whatever reason.
Yeah.
I don't know, ask them, ask me, but that's my experience. But Judge Gorsuch, one of the things he's quite well known for, and Damon Root points this out in his Reason piece, is he's quite well known for his antipathy towards what's called Chevron deference, which is deference to the interpretation of statutes by administrative agencies, which is a doctrine that Justice Scalia strongly supported, and which I criticize in my book. I quote Justice Thomas as critical of that form of deference, and there's other forms of deference as well that Justice Thomas is critical of. Judge Gorsuch is quite vocally critical of that. So that means he's less deferential to administrative agencies, which means he's less deferential to the executive branch, to answer your question, than Scalia was.
Do you think...
Although Scalia was coming around in his later years to this position.
And Chevron deference, at first when I heard that, I was like, oh, that must be an ancient legal term, but it's really about the oil company, right?
Yeah.
Chevron. The moment where Justice Clarence Thomas really becomes a kind of dominant voice on the Supreme Court? Or do you think Gorsuch will be falling in line with Thomas, or will Thomas, kind of dominate opinions going forward? Or does it even make sense to talk that way?
You could talk that way. I don't know. I think Judge Gorsuch is a former Kennedy clerk.
Mm-hmm.
I think his arguments are going to have a lot more play with Justice Kennedy than Justice Scalia's ever did.
Yep.
So in terms of his general persona, he reminds me a bit of Justice Roberts. I mean, he's got this, clean cut Harvard, persona. So I don't know where he's going to. We don't know.
Yeah.
We're going to find out. And we're not going to know before he becomes a justice.
A lot of people on the left...
Well, can I say one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
He gave a big lecture at the Federal Society in 2013, which unfortunately I had to miss, which is too bad to miss. I usually go to all the Olson lectures, and I missed that one, in which he complained about the over-federal criminalization of activities.
Yeah.
Now, that's not really going to affect his performance as a justice. It tells us a little bit about where he's coming from. One of the things he has done in his opinions is he has said, endorsed the Scalia view that said people should not be sent to the penitentiary unless the state can prove mens rea or criminal intent with respect to every element of the offense.
Right.
And he said there are people in the penitentiary who have not been proven to be guilty of mens rea of every element of
and
the offense.
And that means, among other things, that they know they were committing a crime.
They know they were committing the crime for which they're convicted.
Right.
So, for example, if you're convicted as a felon committing a robbery with a gun, then what Judge Gorsuch said is you need to know you're a felon. You need to know you're committing a felony.
Right.
And if you didn't know you were committing a felony, then that's one of the elements of the crime. That's a more criminal justice rights protective attitude. Than other justices. It's what Justice Scalia is known for. And you know what? It's more rights protective than anything we could expect from Merrick Garland.
Right. Who was Obama's pick, who didn't get a hearing.
Right.
Liberals, Democrats, talk a lot about, in the end, everything about the Supreme Court has to do with Roe versus Wade. Is there any reason to believe the Supreme Court will be revisiting the basics of abortion rights?
Define reason to believe.
Okay.
Reason to believe?
I mean, do you think over the next couple of years we're going to have a major abortion decision?
I think they easily could.
Yeah.
Sure. This is, the Roe versus Wade is not settled.
Right.
And it's not, as a sociological matter.
Right.
It's not.
I assume that you believe in abortion rights or reproductive rights for women.
The issue, of course, the constitutional issue is whether the federal government gets to prohibit state laws that regulate this matter. The Federalist position, the Federalist Society, Justice Scalia's position, has never been the total pro-life position. The total pro-life position is that the taking of a human life violates the 14th Amendment.
Right.
You take life without due process of law, therefore abortion is unconstitutional.
Yeah, right.
That's never been Justice Scalia's position. It's never been the conservative position. The conservative position is...
It goes back to the states.
Goes back to the states, and then it has to be fought as a policy matter and according to state constitutional law. State Supreme Courts will then weigh in.
Right.
So that is your worst-case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that some pro-life advocates wouldn't want more than that, but that's never been on the table. And could that happen in the next 5 or 10 years? I think it could happen. I think it could.
Yeah.
Because what's settled and what's not settled is a social construct. Mm-hmm. It's not, there's no objective.
Yeah,
it's not
right.
a scientific fact as to what's settled. And Roe v. Wade has never been settled in the sense that it's never been not contested.
Right.
It's been contested since it was decided.
Right.
As a result, I can see them undoing it and sending it back to the states.
Talk a little bit about...
The thing that would bother me about that is that if is just the reason why they'd be... What would be the reasoning? Would be the reasoning is that if you can't find a right in the Constitution, then there is no such right? Well, you know, I don't agree with that.
Right.
I think the mere fact that a right is not in the Constitution doesn't tell you whether it's protected or
not.
Because it doesn't tell you whether Congress or the states have the power to regulate in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's likely their reasoning, and that reasoning I won't like. But the bottom line is, I think they could revisit it.
What are we missing with the passing of Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court, and what do we gain? I mean, because he obviously was a legal giant. He was a very oversized personality. His opinions mattered, you know, more than most justices. What do we miss from him dying and being off the bench, and what do we gain, though, as a possibility?
Well, for a rather small man, he was bigger than life.
Yeah.
I knew him years ago when I was at the University of Chicago. When as a research fellow, I got to know him, had lunch with him, but didn't really know him, wasn't a friend of his. And I got to D.C., and I was with him more. He came to my class. Once at my seminar at Georgetown, he talked about his book, and I introduced him at several speeches he gave at Georgetown. I had dinners with him. I got to know him and really like him a lot, and I was quite shaken, actually, by his loss, surprising to me. But he was a larger-than-life figure. He was a lion. He was courageous. He would take no quarter. He would give no quarter. He asked for no quarter, he gave no quarter, and he would debate anybody, and he was all about the ideas. And that's great. And he was a absolute stalwart, robust defender of originalism, even if he himself did not practice it consistently, or even if he believed that precedent can override originalism in ways I don't believe.
Right.
Nevertheless, without Justice Scalia's leadership, intellectual leadership, I don't think originalism would be on people's lips today. I listened to a morning talk radio host who I happen to like here in D.C. and on my way over here, and he said, well, you know, Gorsuch is an originalist, blah, blah, blah. That word would not have been coming out of talk radio.
You pointed out that, I mean, before Scalia, justices didn't even really refer to the law, right? I mean, like, they would be like, oh, you know, we think it's this or that, but they didn't look at the text.
Right.
And that's...
He single-handedly changed the practice of law at the Supreme Court level and made them textualist. And Gorsuch is absolutely a textualist. And, you know, we do better. I just think libertarians do better under the Constitution as written than under the Constitution that has been given us by post-New Deal judges.
Right.
I think we do better under the real one than under the pretend one. And so, if you follow the real one, the more you follow it, the better off we are.
Right.
Now, how much will they follow it?
So, what is the opening, though, of in a post-Scalia Supreme Court? I mean, is there a space, particularly for libertarians, you know, and we have been coming off, people were... bothered. Libertarians were bothered by George Bush's kind of, you know, expansive understanding of his executive power. Obama pushed that even more. Donald Trump seems to be very interested in, like, being in charge. You know, will we see a Supreme Court that pulls back on that, or is that not the Supreme Court's role anyway?
If there's certain doctrines that the Supreme Court could start to revive, and it would have an effect. One of them called the non-delegation doctrine, which says Congress cannot delegate its legislative powers to the executive branch, which it has been doing since the 30s.
Yeah.
It's Congress has been doing that, and the court just says, okay, it's okay.
Right.
They could be enforcing that better. there's a lot of conservative agitation, not just libertarian, but conservative agitation to revive that idea. And, you know, I don't know what Judge Gorsuch thinks of this, but I would be guardedly optimistic that he's a friend of that. Because, as he says in his criticism of Chevron, legislators are the ones that should be legislating.
Right.
The problem with the delegation is that they're delegating their legislative power to another branch. And his objection to Chevron is separation of powers, and that's the same objection you make to this delegation. Mm-hmm. So there's his intellectual framework would lead him to be critical of that. That's good for us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not good in terms of, it still respects what Congress does.
Right.
But at least Congress has to do it.
Right.
Not faceless, nameless, unaccountable bureaucrats.
Right. Which his mother was.
Well, she was not faceless or nameless.
No, she was that who could be named, but she was an EPA administrator under under Reagan. So, well, that'll be interesting to see play out. Let me ask you as a final question. Your book, Our Republican Constitution, did it have the effect that you wanted? I mean, of like pulling back to an understanding of, you know, the idea that Congress should be legislating and Congress should be doing its job. The court should be striking down laws that you know, that crowd out individual autonomy and everything. Are you happy with the effect of the book and what comes next for you?
Well, it's too soon to tell.
Yeah.
Because people read it and it either affects them or not. I think the timing of the book, it's about a year or two later than it should have been.
Mm.
You know, if it had come out 2 years earlier before the presidential season heated up, it might have had a chance to influence the race more than it did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's too bad. But look, I couldn't write it until I thought of it, and then I wrote it. I think all the efforts that those of us associated with the Institute for Justice or Damon Root, the people that Damon Root has written about, I think we've had a big effect on the conservative legal culture.
Yeah.
By some accounts, we're winning in the war of ideas. The problem with winning...
And by winning, it's that you're getting people who would identify as conservative to say, you know what, like justices need to be more active in saying, you know, the government doesn't get to make these decisions.
Need to be active
That judges need, you know, that judges need to defend natural rights.
Well, not expressly, but that judges need to robustly enforce the text of the Constitution, and then the next step would be including the provisions that are abstract, like the Privileges or Immunities Clause, something like that. Like Justice Thomas did in his McDonald case when he said privileges or immunities is where this belongs. So I think we're winning. People are less afraid. I mean, I think the Obamacare case was a political watershed. It was an inflection point where people went, oh, you know, this judicial restraint, I'm not so sure I like that so much anymore.
Yeah.
And I think judges have been affected by that. So perhaps Judge Gorsuch was. We all lived through this one big, huge, fantastic 3 day of argument case together. A couple of the judges who wimped out, lower court judges, weren't even on the list of 21.
Right.
They were Supreme Court in waiting themselves. I don't want to name names, but they didn't make it to the list of 21. I think that's because the people who were putting together the list didn't like the wimping out part. So that we were winning in that regard. However, just think about it. Anybody who gets nominated today is going to be in their 50s. He's 49. He got his political, legal, jurisprudential principles 20 years ago before when people like me and Roger Pallon and other people, we were like outliers.
Right.
We're still in a battle, but we're not as big of outliers. Yep. Maybe we've got the wind at our back. But you know, they got their principles back in those days. Mm-hmm. There's a lag. There's a lag time. So I was asked online on Twitter by somebody who asked me, you know, okay, it's like too bad, you know, make me feel better about like the fact that you know, what about unenumerated rights and stuff? I said, hey, look, you can't always get what you want, but if you try, sometimes you just might find
you get what
you need.
Yeah. So we'll talk about about the role, I mean, that you, you had personally, and people like Roger Pallon, but also then the Federalist Society, of this sea change and the institutions, the intellectual institutions that have changed people's mind. That's because law moves slowly, right? I mean, it should move slowly. But this is, You're talking about a revolution that is really, like, you know, 50 years in the making.
Yeah, and I'm active in the Federalist Society. Right. I do a lot with them, for them. I threw in with them. They're a coalition of libertarians and conservatives. They're a coalition of people you called restraint people and not. They're a coalition. But, you know, that's just, you know, if the Federalist Society helped give us Neil Gorsuch, they also gave us John Roberts. They did.
Yeah.
I think that some of the people that may have been responsible for that regret that decision.
Right.
But time, you live and you learn.
Yeah.
I've been around, and others like me have been around to say, hey, look, here's why. Here's why this happened.
Right.
I couldn't have written that book before Obamacare, because it's about, here's why you lost this case. The conservatives got their way and you lost with your guys.
Yeah.
Look for different guys. So I think this time around, they really were looking for different guys. Whether they were looking for a person who thinks due process protects economic liberty or privileged immunities, I'm skeptical.
Yeah.
I think they were looking for somebody with judicial courage.
Mm-hmm. And they found him. Well, we will find out.
It'll take us years to know. You know,
all right. Well, we will leave it there.
We won't find out as a result of the hearings. I'll tell you that. It'll take us years to know.
Will you be watching that as a legal eagle? I mean,
it's like a Supreme Court porn.
Yeah.
Well. Got to watch it.
You can't take
your eyes off the screen.
Yeah. No, it's, Well, and with that horrible thought in our minds, we will end it. But we've been talking with Randy Barnett of Georgetown Law. His most recent book is Our Republican Constitution, which has I don't want to say it's a buttus ripper, but like that opening section where you talk about, you know, Obamacare and how you got involved in that is like just incredible. I mean, it's like
I just wish I'd have put bodice ripping in there.
Yeah, or on the cover. You get Fabio on the cover and everything. But we have been talking with Randy Barnett. I'm Nick Gillespie for Reason TV. Thanks for watching.